The trident is the only device that signifies you and identifies you as a SEAL operator. Every day I earn my trident, no matter where I'm at or what I'm doing, whether it's on the battlefield or on Liberty, I earn my trident every day.
You're listening to the podcast, Send Me. Here with you now is host Jason Sweet.
What's the count, team leader?
What's the count?
Down! Keep going!
Hold it.
Trident! Keep going! Yeah. Yeah.
Brought to you by SOCOM Athlete. Send Me. Send Me.
You're listening to SOCOM Athletes Podcast, Send Me. This is your host, Jason, and today we're bringing you another exciting episode. Joining us today is Navy SEAL Sniper, SEAL Team 7, John Collins, who is the definition of never quit. John went through 6 BUDS classes and 2.5 hell weeks before finally securing his dream of earning the Trident and becoming a Navy SEAL. I first met John at one of our San Clemente Hell Day events a couple years ago, in which he was one of our special guest instructors. We had the opportunity to interview John and later made a video that we posted recently on YouTube. This video has over 3.4 million views, with hundreds and hundreds of comments of people that were inspired by John's story. John is a humble, quiet professional and an incredible human being. He doesn't want to be just another Navy SEAL that wrote a book, but I'm telling you guys right now, and I've told John this, he should absolutely write a book about his story. Some quick announcements before we get rolling into this episode with John. First, I have the honor of flying out to San Diego tomorrow to watch one of our SOCOM athlete studs graduate Navy SEAL training. That SEAL qualification training, he will be officially earning his Trident. This guy came to the SOCOM athlete program when he was only 17 years old, and I've had the honor of watching him develop and mature and go through various stages of adversity to finally accomplish his dream of becoming a Navy SEAL, and I could not be more humbled and proud of this individual. I am pumped to be there on his big day. Next, many of you know about our Special Forces Challenge event that we are hosting on 27 April in San Clemente, California. This event is 100% full. Our waiting list is also full. Now, many of you guys are reaching out to me via email asking if you can get in on this event. I had no idea that this event was going to fill up in less than 12 hours. We will absolutely be running more Special Forces Challenge events in the future, but this event is full. An exciting announcement about the Special Forces Challenge. Medal of Honor recipient Master Sergeant Earl Plumley is officially going to be at the event as our special guest speaker. Earl was our previous podcast guest on our last 2 episodes, so if you haven't done so already, pause this episode and listen to our previous 2 episodes with Earl Plumley. His story is absolutely incredible. Now, we'll also be conducting our Hell Day San Clemente event from April 12th through 14th. That event takes place at the Reconnaissance Training Company on Camp Pendleton, California. The Reconnaissance Training Company is where all Reconnaissance Marines and Navy SARC go through their pipeline and selection courses. So you may have heard of the Reconnaissance Training Assessment Program as well as the Basic Reconnaissance Course. We have the honor of utilizing those very same facilities where all Recon Marines and Navy SARC are born and bred. We'll have instructors to include Navy SEALs, Recon Marines, Navy SARC, Army Rangers, and of course, yours truly, Papa Sweet, will be there directing the event throughout the weekend. And without further delay, let's get to today's guest, John Collins. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, brother. Where are you talking to us from?
I'm good, brother. Thanks for having me, man. It's an honor. Yeah, I'm out here in San Diego, dude. Zero Dark 30. Just trying to kickstart the brain. And yeah, man, I'm happy to be here, brother.
What time is it out there in San Diego right now?
I've been up since like 3:30, just kind of getting ready to talk to you, man. Just getting my mind right, taking a couple notes. Yeah, dude, I'm glad it's nice and quiet in the house. Kids are still sleeping. Dog's still sleeping. Mama's still sleeping. We got the floor, bro, and it's good to be here, man.
So, John, you mentioned the kids, and I've got a 2-year-old son and a 6-month-old son. It is the greatest thing in the world. How do you like being a dad?
It is the best. It's the best. I mean, I honestly never thought that I would be a dad, to be honest. My mind was always on the teams and before I got out of the teams, I almost got teams tattooed on my wedding ring finger. I'm glad I didn't. But then once I got out, man, and I had kids, it was the best thing ever. Having that first kid, you're kind of like blown away. Like, I don't even know what to do with this thing. And then you start getting the hang of it. And now I got three, and it's great, man. They're my little cubs, and I love running around and rolling around with them, playing with them. And I mean, it's just, it's the biggest joy. It's the biggest blessing. It's a gift, man. I love them to death.
For our listeners out there, you know, 90% of you are preparing for a career in special operations. Maybe you're already in the military now. So you got to take things one step at a time, right? But I'll tell you right now that we are living in a society today in America of fatherless men. And I've seen kind of a pivot. Everywhere I go, there are loving dads out there that are involved with their kids and just love being dads. So listen, as you pursue purpose and service in your life, I'm going to tell you right now that there is nothing greater and more needed in this culture today than good, loving dads. So just pray about that, log it away, and be ready to do it one day once you've accomplished your goals.
Dude, real quick on that, man, I'll tell you, I look around and I see guys and gals that are single parents, you know, or co-parenting or whatever. And I don't know how they do it, bro. I mean, I am fortunate enough to have a lot of time at home and be with my kids and help my wife out. I mean, my wife still has the kids, I don't know, 90% of the time if I'm, you know, either at work or hitting the gym or whatever, screaming in my car by myself. I don't know. But I look around and I see these single parents and I don't know how they do it. And it makes me really think about the importance of, you know, staying together with your spouse, staying married, you know, working on your own marriage if it's struggling or whatever, not, you know, not letting the kids dictate how your marriage is with your wife. I mean, because it's not easy, man. It's not easy at all, but it's important and it's absolutely critical for the development of kids. Yeah, man. If for everybody out there that's either thinking about getting married or going through struggles or whatever the case may be, it is essential that you have a loving relationship with your spouse and God. Really, the structure, that's how the whole thing was framed to be and how it was built to last, you know?
So John, were you a dad on the SEAL teams or was this something that happened after you got out?
Nah, brother. I told myself that I would never get married or have kids while I was in the teams. That was like a real important point for me to hold on to. But part of the reason why I got out was to get married and to have kids. So it's my belief that when you are in, you are all in. And I've seen guys who are married with kids in the teams and they make it work, but it's hard, bro. I never wanted to be like a FaceTime dad or, you know, be away from my kids I don't like being away from my kids for more than a day, you know? But the job I got now, there's times where I have to leave for like a week at a time, you know, every couple months or so. And I come back and I swear they look different. And I couldn't imagine what 6 months away from my kids would be like. I know, like I said, I know people do it and make it work, but that's something that I couldn't do. And plus when I was in the teams, bro, it was just like, I wanted to be single, you know, I wanted to have all that energy and focus and attention just like on the job, on the mish. And kids, they take up a lot of time, man.
Yeah, you mentioned focus and you know, guys make it work on the teams, no doubt. But I got a few hundred halo jumps, and one of the things I like to do when my students graduate and become a SEAL or a combat controller or PJ, one of these careers that have halo in the pipeline, is I like to go jump with them. And I've never had a fear of jumping. And when my son JJ was 6 months old, I remember driving out to the drop zone to meet up with one of my students who's a combat controller now to jump at Skydive Panama City. And on the way out there, I started having all these thoughts like, what if I burn in? What if I die on this jump and my son
doesn't have a dad to raise him. And I started kind of getting consumed by these thoughts. And I remember thinking, well, you got two decisions here. You can either go home and not jump, or you can deal with this and go jump. And I'm definitely not going home. So I guess that gives me one option. I'm going to go jump. And I mean, I remember going out there and jumping once and then jumping twice and, you know, being fine. But just those feelings of fear, because you're now living for something bigger than yourself. That was a big distraction, in which, you know, I should have been focused on the jump. And, you know, I'm thinking about my boy. So props to operators that have families, man. It is not easy.
Yeah. Big shout out.
Yeah, man. So, John, the way I've interviewed a lot of SEALs and have worked with a lot of you guys, and correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as you being a sniper, did you start off as an automatic weapons gunner and then like kind of work your way up to being a sniper? Or what was your role, your specialty on the SEAL teams?
Dude, I was a pack mule as a new guy, man. I was just an A-dub gunner. And yeah, I didn't get any sexy schools out of the gate. They were just like, new guy, carry the load and pick up the machine gun, which I happily did. I ran for that Mark 48, bro. I'm like, give me the biggest gun. Give me the most bullets. You know, I don't have any other specialties or sexy schools or anything under my belt here. So let me just get the pig and run around with it. Yeah, man, I actually got real, real lucky. Getting to the teams was one thing, but once I was in the teams, like, doors were swinging wide open for me, man. And I got all the schools I wanted. It was a right place, right time. It was still a grind for sure. But I mean, when I got back from my first pump, I was able to go to sniper school. It's funny, we had a little shoot off overseas for the guys that wanted to go to sniper school. I ended up crushing it. And then we get back and they're like, well, that didn't count. You guys got to do it again. And I was like, and by that time, a few other guys decided to come compete for spots, because there was only a few spots for sniper school. And these other guys that were competing for them, they had originally opted out so that they could go try to do another exclusive school, which I wanted to get in on too. They had like, but there was one spot open. And it was like, if I remember correctly, it was for all West Coast SEAL teams. There was one spot open at Damneck to be a canine handler. Cause that was the other thing I wanted to do, was be a dog guy. And it was either all West Coast or all of SEAL Team 7, which is where I was at. I can't remember, but the point was that you had the option, either you try out for sniper school and take this test, or you try out for this special dog program. I was like, well, the odds of the dog program, like, I mean, even if it was just SEAL Team 7, you know, it's like one out of how many platoons, you know, one spot. So I was like, all right, well, I'll get to that later. I'll get to the dog teams later. So I did the sniper thing, crushed the test overseas, come back. And then these other guys who didn't get picked up for the canine program, man, they decided now they want to go try out for sniper school. And I was in... it was like a prerequisite course called PIC. It's like photo image capture, kind of clever. It's where you learn how to take pictures and, you know, do like some recon and, you know, a little camera school. And it was like, I think it was like 2 weeks, but the entire time I was in that course, these other guys that didn't get picked up for the dog program were out practicing the test. And then after I finished that PIC school, we had to take the test again. You had to test into sniper school. So now I'm going up against these guys that have just been doing, they haven't been at the prerequisite school, but now they want to take the test. I mean, I still crushed them and went on to sniper school, but I was just like, I was kind of pissed, because I'm like, you guys, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I ended up going to sniper school. It was honestly, I feel like every team guy should go to sniper school. Like, you learn things there that you're like, man, this is like, It's really a lot of it's like basic frogman skills, you know, and it's 7 weeks. It's awesome time. You learn a lot. Yeah, man. And then after that, I came back. As soon as I got back, the other guys that tried out for, you know, sniper school, they ended up going right after me. And I'm sitting around at the platoon and somebody comes in. They're like, hey, they need a guy to go to canine school. I'm like, right here. So it was a right place, right time kind of thing, man. Like, While I was at the dog team later on in my career, one of my buddies, he got offered, I was on leave, and he got offered breacher school while I was on leave. And for whatever reason, he passed it up. And as soon as I got back from leave, my chief was like, yo, man, you want to go to breacher school? And I'm in trade ed. Like, I'm not like in a platoon, like active operating, whatever. But I'm like, hell yeah, dude, like, let's go. So I was when I was on leave, I was back home in Maryland. You know, I was home for 2 weeks, come back to San Diego. Hey, man, you want to go to breacher school? Absolutely. Kicked right back out to the East Coast. I was in Virginia, like a few hours away from my hometown, and was able to go back home on the weekends because I think that school was like a month or month and a half long. So I was able to go back home. It was like, I felt like 2 months worth of leave, man, just like learning how to do cool things. And so like, those are my top three schools, was sniper, breacher, canine. And before I even like joined the military or knew anything about it, I'm like, I want to be a sniper. I want to be a breacher, and I want to work with the dogs. And by God's good graces, I was able to do it, man. So yeah, that was my my little hat trick.
That's huge, brother. And for those of you that listen to our podcast on a regular basis, you're probably going to notice a trend that if you are a great new guy on your team and you serve the needs of your team selflessly, eventually the doors are going to open wide open for you. And you're going to get some opportunities that you may have never thought you'd get before. And John is, and his story is just another, you know, great proof of how important it is to being a new guy. So being a good new guy. So John, let's rewind a little bit, my man. As you know, 90% of our listeners are young men that are aspiring to go to BUDS or Special Forces Assessment Selection or Pararescue Indoctrination or ANS, as it's now called, all of these types of selection courses. So where were you at when you were in their shoes? And would you mind telling us maybe a childhood story or two of how you ended up going into the Navy?
Yeah, bro. So, I mean, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a SEAL. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to fight and kill bad guys. That's it. And I wanted to do it with the guys that could do it best. And in my mind, it was the SEALs. And at the time, growing up in the 90s, there wasn't a whole lot about them. And that's what I liked. I mean, now, unless you've been living under a rock for the past 20 years, you can find all the information you want about SEALs. But back then, man, it was like, got the Marines, I kind of get it. Got the Army. Okay. SEALs, like, what's that? I'm just thinking, like, in my mind, ninjas, you know, and like sea, air, and land, like, that's the acronym. I'm like, we'll get you from anywhere. You can run, but you can't hide. And being a little kid, you know, like, just all pumped up on adrenaline and bouncing off the walls, and that's all I wanted to do, man, as far back as I can remember. So yeah, coming up, I kind of lost sight of it in high school. My parents went through a pretty bad divorce, and I got mixed up with the wrong crowd. I, you know, started rebelling and just doing all the things I shouldn't do. Just, you know, angry teenager stuff, right? And it wasn't until after high school, you know, I barely went to high school. I barely graduated high school. But it wasn't until after that I was working at a video store, which really dating myself now, but I'm a big movie buff. I liked working there because, you know, I just got to take home movies and watch and, you know, watch them while I was working and talk to people about it, whatever. But I'm like, I knew that there's no future in working at a video store. I'll never forget one of the guys that I worked with. He came in one day to put in his 2 weeks. And I'm like, well, what's up, man? Like, where are you going? And he's like, well, I just joined the Army. And I kind of like laughed. I'm like, really? The Army? Like, why would you join the Army? Like, you're gonna join. Why wouldn't you go all out? You know, why wouldn't you do something like Marine Corps? You know, like, why wouldn't you go like super hard? Which, I mean, again, freaking, I don't know anything at this point. I'm like 18, 19, right? Like, I don't know. All respect to the Army and the Marine Corps, all service members. But, you know, at the time, I'm, you know, some smart mouth punk kid. And I'm giving this guy a hard time. And what am I doing? And that's exactly what I thought, too, because I kind of, you know, I was ribbing him. He was a buddy. So I was kind of, you know, just joshing him a little bit. But the truth is said in jest sometimes. And, you know, he kind of just shrugged it off. He's like, yeah, you know, that's what I want to do. I was like, all right. And I'll never forget. He walked out of that store And he walked by the window right in front of me as I'm like putting DVDs back into DVD cases. And the look on his face, bro, it was so stoic and so proud. And I'm like, who the hell am I to judge this guy or give this guy any shit? Because he's doing something that, I mean, I don't even have the balls to do. And that like reignited my memory, you know, like I remembered who I was and what I wanted to do. And I was like, I got to thinking about it. I'm like, dude, SEAL teams, this is what I want to do. This is what I've always wanted to do. And I mean, that guy right there, like he helped me remember. And I got like butterflies in my stomach. Cause I was like, at the time, you know, again, I was an angry teenager and my dad and I weren't getting along and, you know, screw you, dad, and blah, blah, blah. But like, I mean, I love my dad to death. I mean, he's a huge reason why I'm where I'm at right now and how I became a SEAL. But I got so pumped to just run home and tell him like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And yeah, man, I went home and I told him and he kind of looked at me like he was trying to size me up and figure me out. It's like, is this like some BS or are you actually serious about this? And he was like, I ran home, told him like, hey, this is what I want to do. And he's looking at me. He's like, all right. And I don't think he bought it at first. He was just kind of biding his time and seeing how I was going to like what my next step was because talk is cheap. Right. But then he saw me like running in the neighborhood. He came home from work one day and I was out there just training, you know, going for a run. And he cruised up next to me. He's like, ah, so you're really about that? I'm like, I'm really about that. Yeah, man. And then I just started putting the work in to get strong and get in shape and join the military.
What a great story, man. You had that humbling moment while working at the movie store and this guy joining the army and you kind of feeling that conviction of giving him a hard time is what gave you the push to go do it, man. I love it. I haven't heard anything really like that as far as a motivator to go in. What'd you do to train to get ready besides running the neighborhood, of course?
Dude, I ran, I did push-ups, I did sit-ups, I did pull-ups. I barely did any swimming because I'm thinking to myself, like, I know how to swim. Like, I grew up in the ocean, you know, swimming in the pools and stuff. Like, I was on the swim team at one point when I was a kid. I'm like, yeah, swimming. You know, and I didn't think too much about it. Little did I know.
Where did you grow up, John?
Maryland. Yeah. So I was about 45 minutes outside of Baltimore, a small town called Sykesville. Yeah. Not a whole lot to do, you know, plenty of places to run around. And I did sports growing up, you know, I played football, I wrestled, I played lacrosse. So I was always like athletic, but I never really took it as serious as I should have. I just wanted to run around and have a good old time. And I didn't really care about too much, especially in high school or whatever. I'm like, like I said, I played sports, but I wasn't really like, in my mind, I'm like, I'm not going to go to the NFL or go to the Olympics or anything. So, I mean, having an athletic background definitely helped me for training. Again, like there wasn't a whole lot of like research you could do back then to train for buds or anything like that. It wasn't until I talked to a dive motivator, another SEAL, about how to train for buds. It wasn't even how to train for buds, man. It was like, you have to pass a fitness test, a PT test to get contract to go to buds. And the PT test was like, started out swim 500 yards, X amount of pushups, X amount of sit-ups, X amount of pull-ups, and then run like a mile and a half. And, you know, there's times for the swim and the run. And then you have to do a certain amount of pushups, sit-ups, and pull-ups to get that contract. But you couldn't just meet the standard. You had to, you know, crush it in order for them to actually take a good look at you. So it got to a point where all I was doing was the PT test. You know, the last like 2 months before I joined the Navy, I would just do the PT test like two times a day. You know, wake up in the morning, have some breakfast, head on over to the local university, jump in the pool, do the swim, do the push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, go to the track, run a mile and a half. And I would do that twice a day for, you know, the last 2 months before I joined the military. And it did not help me. I mean, it helped me get the contract and everything, but that was not what was needed to get through training. I mean, obviously you need to be able to pass that, but there's other ways to do it. I was just, you know, I didn't know any better, right? You don't know what you don't know. And I was just doing what I thought I needed to do, but I learned pretty quick.
All right, John. So how old were you once you started the process with a recruiter in the Navy?
20.
20 yeah, years old. Like,
just turned 20. And which, you know, looking back on it, I mean, I know guys that joined right out of high school were 18. And I feel like those 2 years that I kind of screwed off, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say it worked against me, but it really didn't. It was just 2 years I wish I would have not been screwing off. I wish I would have figured it out earlier so that I could have spent more time, you know, in the teams and things like that. But yeah, I was 20 years old when I started taking it serious.
And as far as when you started the process with that Navy recruiter to when you actually shipped out to the Navy, about how long was that? Did they prepare you for any success at Buds, or did they just ship you right out as soon as you started passing your PSTs?
I had about a year. You know, I went in to the recruiter's office and I told them I wanted to join the teams, and you know, they were stoked that they didn't have to work for me, you know. And these guys, they had no idea about SEAL teams anyway, but they're like, well, how many push-ups can you do? And before I even started training, you know, that's first thing they ask, how many push-ups can you do? And I got down and just cranked out like 90 without stopping, you know, like I said, like I was always kind of athletic. So I just, you know, just started cranking them out. I'm like, oh, okay, well, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, then they put me in touch with the actual dive motivator, which was a SEAL. And he was the one who actually started, you know, schooling me on the PST and things like that. And this is what, these are the times you got to meet and blah, blah, blah. Dude, that first PST that I took, like I said before, like I thought I was just going to breeze through the swimming piece. You know, I was only focused on, you know, push-ups, pull-ups, and, you know, running really. Dude, I hopped in that pool, man, and I started breaststroking 500 yards. And after 100 yards, I was gassed, dude. I was struggling. I'm like, what the hell? Like, I do not remember swimming being this hard. I struggled through that last 400 yards. I got out of the pool and I was smoked. And like, I barely made it through the rest of the PST. And then I ended up failing the run because I was completely on empty. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, and running was like, I love to run. I still love to run. And running was like kind of, I found it to be fun. And when I failed that run, it was just because I had nothing left in the tank. And I'm like, what the hell? And then he ended up showing me the combat side stroke. It was the first time I'd ever heard of it. And you know, swimming is all about being fluid and streamlined in the water. Yeah, so I just started working on my side stroke, started swimming and just doing that PST over and over and over until I was just crushing it. I still did a lot of push-ups and I, you know, do different distance running, but it wasn't until the last 2 months before I joined the military that I really just started honing in on that PST because I wanted to make sure that I got that contract, you know, going in. And then even once you get to Buds, like day one, like you have to do a PST. And I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to get kicked out day one because I can't pass my swim or run or anything like that. So that's why I was so focused on it.
For listeners out there, it's a really important point because a lot of you guys, when you train, you do a pool session and then you go to school and then you may run that afternoon or whatever it may be. To really train the way you're going to fight, you need to make sure that you do your swim session, get changed out really quick, and immediately get out there and do your run. Because as John mentioned, after a swim, your legs can really feel like jello. And a good gauge of how fit you are for the fight is how well you can run after you get done with a 500-yard swim. John, you joined the Navy in 2006. It looks like I'm looking at my notes here, October of 2006. And then you started Buds in February of 2007. How was basic training and just your whole route to Buds? I mean, that's only a, you know, 4 month difference there. How was that?
Yeah. Joined the military, shoved off to boot camp on Halloween, 2006. Boot camp was like 2 months. They had at the time, they had all the guys that were trying out to go to Buds. You would wake up in the morning before everybody else in boot camp, you know, got up and out of their racks. You'd get up and you'd march across the street and they had like a pool area where you do some swimming. You know, you do like little PT sessions. You know, Navy boot camp, You PT, but you don't really PT. So you had to get that extra. It was extra training for guys that were going to Bud so that you stayed fit and in shape and ready to go. Yeah. So after that, kind of like in like a holding pattern for like a month or two, and then finally got the orders to go to Bud's and got out here to San Diego. And it wasn't until it was like February, March-ish is when I first classed up. And I got to say, man, cruising across that Coronado Bridge and, you know, seeing that island and knowing that that's where the training was held and where all my heroes dwelled. It was like a kingdom, man. You know, like going over that bridge into Nado. It's like cruising into a kingdom and you're going right into like the lion's den and you're going for it. And back then, bro, it was like, it was kind of chaotic at the Bud's compound, man. There wasn't a whole lot of checks and balances, you know, even like when the instructors weren't around, you know, and you're around like other students, like it was kind of wild. Guys were doing some crazy stuff. Nowadays it's a lot tighter, but it was cool though, you know, cause you kind of felt like it was like a fraternity, man, you know, running around seeing like the brown shirts. You're like, oh man, like those are the guys that made it through Hell Week. You're like, you know exactly who they are, you know, and they're giving you a bunch of crap. And you know, because you're a white shirt, you're green, you're wide-eyed, and you know, you got that stupid buzz cut from boot camp, and you're just pasty white. And yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. It was a lot of fun. And then I classed up 264 in like February, March-ish. The dates are a little hazy, but I know it was still cold out, just getting over that that winter freezing rain. But yeah, started out class 264. You have, for anybody that doesn't know, right? You have indoc, first phase, second phase, third phase. That's Bud's right there. And in the beginning, you know, you got to get medically cleared. So you're kind of walking around or running around, shuffling around with a red cross on your t-shirt. So everybody knows you're not cleared yet. Once you get cleared, then you're kind of waiting to class up. And then once you class up, well, Let me back up. Once you get cleared medically, you kind of get lumped in with a whole bunch of guys, as many guys as they can fit. And it's usually like 300 to 350 guys running around, and you're in this like indoc phase, right? So it's about 3 weeks. You do the PST a lot, and you run around, and you do the O course a bunch, and you do some swims, you do some running, but you're not getting hammered. You're just like, you're just doing some PT, right? It's not too tough. You'll hit the surf a little bit here and there, but you're not getting smashed, right? So you look around and, you know, everybody's kind of like, oh, this ain't so bad, you know? And my mindset going into it was like, this is going to be the worst thing I ever do. This is going to be the hardest thing I ever do. And I tried to maintain that because I didn't ever want to, I always wanted to respect it, because you hear about how many people quit and how few make it. And, you know, you're running around and you kind of get like a false sense of security within doc. Cause you're like, oh, this ain't so bad. I'm like, no, like that other foot is going to drop, and it drops, bro. You know, you got guys, you got 300 something guys classing up. It was probably, by the time we actually classed up, it was between like 250 and 300 guys going into first phase. And, you know, you have your first phase party, right? During the weekend, it's like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, shave your head. You go out to Dave and Buster's or wherever, have a little barbecue at the barracks. Everybody's coking and joking and having a good old time. But there's like that doom on the horizon that, I mean, you just know something's coming. You don't know what it is, but it's there. And that coking and joking, I think it might be like a defense mechanism or something. I don't know. But come Monday morning, man, day one, it is on, dude. It is on. And you're up at 4 o'clock in the morning on the grinder doing PT, right? I mean, you got guys quitting before it even starts. You know, guys are in their own head and they psyching themselves out, and you start hearing that bell ringing, dude. And it's nutty, man. Out there getting your face blasted with a cold water hose and hitting the surf, wet and sandy, you know, you got sand everywhere. And then, you know, you do your PT for a couple hours and surf torture and off to breakfast and back to the barracks for inspection. And you hit the ground running, man. And it doesn't stop. That's the thing. It's like those first 3 weeks of BUDS are by far the hardest. Harder than Hell Week, I'd say, because Hell Week, at least you don't sleep. And if you don't sleep, you don't have to worry about waking up, right? When you're getting grinded and you're just like, just getting pulverized every day, and you go to bed and you know you got to wake up and do it again. Sometimes you don't sleep during, you know, the first 3 weeks either. And remember one time I got like 30 minutes of sleep, and it was like, I don't even know why I'm like attempting to get any rest here, because I'm just laying in bed thinking about how I got to get up. Right. But yeah, man. So first 3 weeks, Monday, you got your run you got to do. You got a 4 mile run. Tuesday, you do your 2 mile ocean swim. Wednesday, you do your O course, and you've got to meet the times. Each phase has a time limit for each evolution, and it gets faster and faster as you progress in training. And a common theme you'll see here is that I am not the best in the water. It's funny because being a SEAL, like we're water ninjas, but dude, I struggled in the water so much, man. And when I was in 264, my first class, I was failing those swims. I think that first phase, you have 85 minutes to do 2 mile ocean swim, and I was like in the 90 bracket. And runs, I was doing fine. O course, no problem. And then I got to the end of the third week of first phase, and they gave us like one more shot to pass our ocean swims, like all the guys that were on the bubble, and I didn't pass. So Friday before Hell Week, I'm standing in front of a board of hard ass frogmen, and they are just raining down on you about how you suck, how you don't deserve to be here, how we should drop you right now. And you're just standing there at attention, taking your medicine, hoping that they don't drop you. And they kind of go down the line. They look at your, you know, your record, how you're doing on your other evolutions. You know, back then you got one performance role and you got one medical role, like air quotes, one, right? I mean, they could drop you for failing. I mean, that's what it is. You know, it's on the instructors, it's on the cadre. You're lucky if you get one. And I got lucky, and they rolled me the Friday before Hell Week. And so now I'm back with the next class. I think I had a few weeks off to kind of wait for the next class to get to Indoc, right? And then you class back up with them, you know, you're on the roster again, and rinse and repeat, bro. It was like, I mean, by this time I had already done the log PTs. I'd done the boats, you know, I'd seen like what everyone was talking about, why everyone was quitting, right? I mean, other than Hell Week, I got a glimpse at it, and I knew what was coming. So class back up with 265. We had about 250, 300 guys going into first phase again. Back to day 1-1, up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Back out there on the grinder, getting beat, bells ringing. Yeah, man. And, you know, you're getting hammered, bro. Like those first 3 weeks are no joke. I mean, you get that log PT, that, you know, running around with a boat on your head. I mean, you're getting crushed. And it's not, the thing is, these evolutions, it's not like you're getting stronger. It's not like you're doing this to get jacked. Like you are surviving, you know, and you got to go into this in shape. You got to go into this like with stamina, because you're not doing this to get buff. And the thing is too, is like, you don't want to be the weak link either. You know, I've heard guys on your podcast before talking about being boat duckers and not carrying their load on a log and things like that. It's like, that's a real thing, man. And you know, you build your reputation in BUDS. And if you're weak and you're not carrying your fair share of the weight, man, like you're going to get, back then you got run out. Like, I mean, guys would throw you out from underneath a boat, you know, your own boat crew. And then the instructors would see it and they'd grab you too. And I mean, it was dog eat dog, bro. And But that's what I loved about it. You know, as much as it sucked and as hard as it was like, dude, this is where it's at. You know, it's like, this is just, it's hardcore, bro. And man, back in the first 3 weeks of Buds, like I knew what was coming, but it doesn't mean it was easier. You know, it's like, if you and me are standing here and we're having a conversation and I just wind up and kick you in the nuts as hard as I can, like, what are you going to do? You're going to collapse. You're going to throw up. You're going to cry. You're going to throw up a little bit more. Right. And you stand back up and I say, hey, Jason, I'm going to kick you in the nuts again, just as hard. You can't prepare yourself for that, bro. Like,
it doesn't make you any better at getting kicked in the nuts.
No, dude, it doesn't. Like a kick in the nuts is a kick in the nuts. You know, it's like, just because you know it's coming doesn't mean it's easier. And if anything, I would say it sucks even more because you're like, oh, damn it. Like, this is not going to be fun. Like, by this point, I was passing my swims, but just barely. Like, I knew I needed to put out and I was going as hard as I could. You know, I was like, I think my swim times were like 84 minutes, 84:30. You know, I was right there on the cusp, but I was passing. And that allowed me the opportunity to train more, allowed me to go on.
Quick question, John. I know the answer to this, but for our listeners out there, so that they can learn from some of your mistakes or some of the things you had some challenges with on those open water swims, what were some of the issues that you were having on those open water swims, and how did you ultimately fix them in order to pass?
Well, I just suck at swimming for one. And then you got to be able to guide. And what I mean by guide is, like, when you're swimming in the open water, you can't really see a whole lot. Like, I hate swimming, dude. I know it's good for you and I know you got to be a good swimmer. And eventually when I can't run anymore, I'm going to be swimming a lot more because there's really no impact on your body. And, you know, you really do get in great shape. But for me, it was just like, it's boring. It's long. You can't see anything. You know, you're just looking at your buddy. Hopefully you can see him, you know, in the water, right? But you're swimming with a buddy, then you pop your head up and you kind of see where you're at in relation to what you're swimming towards, which, you know, you got a big buoy a mile out from where you start and you can't see the buoy from where you're at, but you kind of pick a reference point and you just kind of guide to that. And if you're not swimming straight, dude, which I always had somebody else guide because I was crooked as hell just swimming. And if you're not swimming straight, man, like, you're losing time. You're burning up your time. So you got to be as streamlined as possible. I mean, in every sense of the word, like, streamlined in the water, streamlined guiding to your target. And if you're not a fast swimmer and you're not streamlined, like, you're going to fail. And that's what ended up happening. You know, that's what happened in my first class. And then by the time I got to 265, my second class, I had a little bit better understanding of how to do it. And, but I mean, I was still slow. And, you know, you can either flutter kick or dolphin kick when you're swimming. I switched back and forth between both. It was the biggest thing for me to train to was the swimming. And I ended up, I'll get to it, but I ended up getting pretty decent at it. But at the time, again, you don't know what you don't know. And going into this, I didn't know what open water swimming with rubber fins and a mask and a wetsuit was all about. You know, I was just like, oh, swimming, right? No.
Right.
I figured it out.
And for our listeners out there, there's a lot to unpack there. So I'm gonna help you unpack this a bit. So first of all, whether you want to be a PJ or you want to be a SEAL, you're going to learn the combat side stroke when you are working on your PST, as they call in the Navy, or your IFT, as they call in the Air Force, initial fitness test. That's going to be your entry level swim stroke. But when you get into the open water, whether it be a combat dive school in the Air Force or BUDS for your open water swims, as John is referencing, you're not going to be doing the combat side stroke anymore because you're going to have a set of rigid fins on your feet. And that requires you to flutter kick. So you may see our Hell Day videos, and we got guys on the side of the pool doing flutter kicks all day, and we're flooding their mask with water. The reason why you do flutter kicks is to build that long-term endurance in your hip flexors so that you can be successful at open water finning one day. And the muscles that you use in finning are drastically different from the muscles that you use for a scissor kick on the combat side stroke. And not only that, you're probably working on combat side stroke in a pool. And in a pool, you have lane lines that give you that automatic subconscious point of reference. And then you have generally that blue tile line on the floor of the pool. So you have two points of reference, right? But when you get in that open water, not only do you not have lane lines anymore, or that tile, blue tile line on the floor, you've got current, you've got sea state, you've got the tides to deal with, and you have a long distance. You're not pushing off the wall anymore. You've got to swim or fin straight to the buoy, go around that buoy and come back. And one last piece of advice before I turn it back over to John is that when you have a swim buddy, which is always when you're in the open water, you and your swim buddy are going to face each other. And generally, as a right-handed swimmer, you're going to guide with your right hand, which means your right leg is going to be your power leg. That's the leg that is submerged deeper in the water. If you and your swim buddy both have the same preference of having your right arm out to guide, that means you're not going to be able to face each other. And that's not an authorized position at BUDS or at Combat Dive School. So it's very important that you don't just get used to guiding or doing your CSS on the same side with right leg down, right leg out guiding. You got to make sure that you switch it over so you're not the guy who's holding your buddy team back in the open water. You're ready to just adjust and be dynamic on the fly. John, do you have anything to add on to that? I know that was a lot to unpack, but the mic's back on.
Yeah, man. Dude, you nailed it, bro. you're actually making me realize like how much I forgot about training. You know, I mean, this was 2007, right? You hit a bunch of great points there. I mean, you know, you're in a wetsuit, you got a hood on, you got a mask, you've got a life vest, you know, you got your web belt with your knife, you know, you got your rubber fins. It's completely different. You don't have the luxury of seeing where you're going in the water. Like you said, you're not pushing off of anything. You're not scissor kicking, right? That dolphin kick is huge because you're essentially your whole body, you're just whipping your whole body through the water. And it's like, if you can be streamlined like that, I mean, that's, you get a lot of power that way. The flutter kick is just a constant thing, you know? So it's important to have, you know, a strong core, strong hip flexors. It's legit, man. Like a 2 mile ocean swim, you know, you're fighting against the current and things like that. You know, it's no joke. And you got to understand, like with BUDS, you're getting smashed the entire time. You know, you're doing PT, you're in the leaning rest, which, dude, I remember being in the push-up position for like 5 hours one time, like no joke, like 5 hours, just like you're getting smashed the entire time. And then you are expected to perform. You're expected to not just pass, but crush the tests. Like that's what they're looking for, you know? And so when you do a 2 mile ocean swim, right, you know, week one, day two, you're doing your ocean swim, you're not that beat up yet. Week three, day two, like you're smoked, you know, you're going on very little sleep, right? You've been getting grinded and back in the water, right? Get out there, perform, crush it. Show me that you got what it takes, right? I mean, it doesn't let up. It doesn't end, right? So yeah, man, by the time I got to class 265, I understood a little bit more about the open water swimming. I was right there. I was passing just barely. It allowed me the opportunity to continue training, which the big monster hell week, right? Going into that. So we started 265 with like maybe 250 guys, let's say. By the time we got to hell week, we had 80 guys. And after hell week, we had 39. And going into hell week, man, like first time doing it, you're just like, that's kind of like the big monster. You know, you don't know what it is. You just hear horror stories and this is where everybody quits and blah, 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 and this and that. I mean, don't get me wrong. Hell week sucked, especially that first one, not knowing, like, and it was like, it's legit, dude. You start on Sunday, you don't sleep until Wednesday. You get like a couple hours to recover. You get another couple hours on Thursday to recover, and you just got to still be standing by Friday. But I mean, you're getting it all. You're getting that first 3 weeks in 1 week without any sleep. But yeah, man, I just remember those numbers were how drastically they dropped. You know, you class up with 250 guys. By the time you get to hell week, you have 80. That right there, tells you what those first 3 weeks are like. It's just a grind. You're just getting hammered. And then you come out the other side of Hell Week, half the class is gone, right? You had 80 guys, now we got 39. But now you've hit a checkpoint. There's checkpoints in Buds, and getting through Hell Week is a checkpoint, because now if something happens and you get rolled, you're post Hell Week, which after Hell Week, you got a few more weeks of first phase. By now they know that you're not going to quit. You're not going to quit because of pain or getting beat. It's now they're focusing more on you learning some things. Like, you're still getting it, you know, you're still getting hammered, but you're not. I mean, what would people say if you quit after Hell Week? You know, it's like you still got to bring it. But I mean, you've come this far, like, you're not quitting now. Yeah. So made it through Hell Week, got to second phase. And before I even got to second phase, like, my neck, my back were really jacked up. And I'm like, I thought maybe I'd recover. You know, I just needed like, some good sleep, some rest, which you don't really get. You're still, you know, going through Buds, right? But come like the first week of second phase, like, I couldn't turn my head left or right. I was like Frankenstein, or like Michael Keaton in Batman. You know, I couldn't turn my head left or right. And I ended up going to medical, and they're like, yeah, your neck is screwed up, man. I had no cartilage between the discs in my spine.
What?
And I mean, I still,
jeez, man,
I still got neck pain to this day. And that's, I'm going through, you know, two Buds classes, two first phases, and a Hell Week with a boat on my head. You know, that's what happens when you don't duck the boat. So I ended up going to medical, and they rolled me. So I just, it gave me some time to recover. I did a little bit of rehab, and you know, they gave me some things to do or whatever. I got to a point where I got movement back in my head and my neck, but I mean, it's still killing me. But back on the saddle and classed up with 266, starting second phase, uncharted territory, right? Everything I had kind of thought about as far as Buds up to this point was all like Hell Week, Hell Week, Hell Week, you know, which is like, Hell Week is the smallest part of Buds. It's 1 week. And after that, it's like, who cares anymore, right? You still got to train. You still, you know, got to pass your evolutions. You still got to crush it. So this is all uncharted territory for me. And guess what? It's all on the water, which by now you've learned I'm not the greatest in. Going through it, right? First couple of weeks, you're learning all about diving and tanks and what it's all about. Then you get to dive week. And in dive week, you've got a different test every day. And it slowly increases. It ramps up day by day. You know, you start out like ditching your gear and then donning it underwater, taking your tanks off, putting them back on, buddy breathing, things like that. And then you get to pool comp. I think there's either 7 or 9 tests, but pool comp is the last one. And that's on Friday. So each test, you get a few chances. You get 4 chances for each test. Up until this point, I probably failed one test one time. Because like I said, it slowly ramps up. It's not too strenuous or too chaotic. But then you get to pool comp. And like, that's where everything you've learned up to this point comes into play. And now you're getting rocked by the instructor cadre, and they're coming underwater as you're crawling around on your hands and knees. You got your tanks on, you got your mouthpiece in, and you got your weight belt on. And then they're like sharks swimming above you, circling you. And then they just dive down and they start tossing you around, and you know, they rip your mask off, tie your hoses in knots, you know, and they're beating you up. And it's to simulate getting hit by a wave in the surf, right? And what it's training you to do is keep your composure in an event like that, right? If you get rocked by a wave and your mask flies off and your hoses get tied up, like, how am I going to get my air without drowning? Yeah, man, you get 2 chances at the test on Friday, right? And if you fail both those chances, you get 2 more on Monday. Right. So every test you get 4 shots at.
That's a long weekend too, man. Like, I remember,
brother, it is the longest.
I think you guys call it HITS in the Navy. At combat dive school, it's called one man competency. And I remember you get three hacks. You can try twice on Friday. And if you don't make the cut, you got one more shot on Monday. And for whatever reason, you know, when they tie the knots on your manifold, which for our listeners out there is what connects your tanks to your regulator hose, you know, you're supposed to be able to strike these knots and you get one breath and then boom, your instructor hits you again, rips your regulator out and ties it back there. And eventually the instructor is going to tie a knot called the whammy knot. And this is an unstrikable knot. And you have to have the poise and the situational awareness while being hypoxic and starving for air to recognize this is the whammy knot, undo the waist belt on your tanks, bring them over to your face and start breathing off of that. And if you think that it's the whammy knot and you start undoing your waist belt, one of the instructors will shove a regulator in your mouth, and that's how you know you failed. And I remember getting a regulator shoved in my mouth on my first test and getting so far into, you know, it's like a 20-minute evolution. So you're so far into it, and then you find out you failed. It's just this horrible feeling. And you're like, dude, I could have sworn that was the whammy knot, right? Like, what kind of trickery are you doing here? And then boom, second time failed. And I remember like that weekend just being one of the longest weekends of my life. And I had a buddy who had passed, and he was practicing. We had a set of practice tanks, and I spent all weekend in the classroom just practicing with those practice tanks. And I remember Monday getting the job done and passing it. But what was your experience with the hits, man?
Dude, you nailed it, man. Here's the thing. The first test that I took, I failed it in like 3 minutes. So like you said, it's like a 20-minute test. And when you fail your first one, like strike one, and you haven't even seen the test, you know, you 3 minutes, like what is that? You don't know what 10, 15 minutes looks like. So you kind of, it sucks to fail in the first few minutes of that first test. Cause it's like, all right, well, there's one shot blown. And then I think my second test, I failed it in like 8 or 9 minutes. And then, like you said, dude, that is the longest weekend. I don't have much to reference. We had the practice tanks as well, but you know, dude, I didn't respect it enough. I didn't respect the practice tanks and the training enough. And I think that's what did me in. I know that's what did me in. I didn't think that it would do any good. I was just like, I just got to get back in there and I got to just do it. I just spent all weekend just thinking about this thing. Like, okay, I spent the weekend thinking instead of the training, and come Monday, I had two more shots at that test, bro, and I failed them both, and I knew I was done. I was almost like out of body because I'm like, no, this I've come too far. And I knew it though. I knew it was over because back then, one performance, one medical, you know, if you're lucky, right? I went to a board and I'm standing there, and it was just like out of body, bro. Like I'm standing there and they're hammering you and they're telling you you're done. You don't deserve to be here. Pack your shit and get out. And I wasn't the only one either. You know, there was a few other dudes that post hell week, you know, you're in second phase, fail pool comp. You've already been rolled for something else performance wise. And dude, I got dropped with two buddies. That was it, man. It was the most heartbreaking, gut-wrenching, worst feeling in the world. And I'll never forget it. And I remember calling my old man and I was crying. I'm like, I'm done. Like that's it. It's over. And like my whole world was like collapsed, shattered, gone. Everything that I was like wanted to do and wanted to be is no longer on the table anymore. I'm like, and you know, it took a couple of days to kind of like sulk and mourn and cry and just hate myself. And then I'm like, okay, enough of that. What's next? And I'll never forget my dad telling me, he's like, remember this feeling. Remember how you feel right now. And he goes, and if you want it bad enough, you'll get it, right? You'll get back there and you'll do it. But you got to remember this feeling. And yeah, man, I was like, okay, what do I got to do to get back, right? So once you fail, you get dropped, you get lumped together with all the quitters, which you've never met a tougher bunch of dudes than guys that just quit Buds. You know, they're walking around like coking and joking and laughing and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, dude, I just saw you last week, like whining and crying under a boat. And here you are like acting tough. And I mean, I hated it. I hated everyone I was around. I hated like myself for failing, but I was like, all right, I got to get back. How do I get back? You go to a guy that like an admin guy that helps guide you on your next step. What do you want to do next? And I'm like, all right, well, what's the quickest way back to Buds? Like, that's what I want to do next. I want to get back out there and I want to do it again. Right. This is who I am. Like I failed, but I'm not a failure. I am a SEAL. I have it. You know, I need another shot at it. And yeah, I didn't say that, but that's what I'm thinking. Right. I'm like, what's the quickest way back? He's like, well, we got a 1-year billet to Guantanamo Bay. I'm like, quickest way back, done. I'll take it. Well, what they don't tell you is it's not a year and it's not easy. And it's not like, hey, go do your time and then get back out there and give it another shot, kid. It's you're in the fleet, man. When you're in the pipeline, you know, you're trying out, right? For lack of a better term, you're trying out to get on the team. When you're not in the pipeline, dude, you're not even in the league anymore, right? So your needs of the Navy. So I'm, yeah, I got dropped August 31st, 2007, right? I'm not even a year into the Navy. And here I am going to Guantanamo Bay. I get lumped in with, and I wasn't the only guy who got dropped for pool comp. And these other guys that I was with, they took the billet too. And they're like, we need another shot. Like, we know who we are and we dropped the ball, but if you give me another shot, I can do it. Especially after you make it through Hell Week, bro. And you're just like, I didn't quit. I've got this. Like, I just need to practice. I need to train. And so myself and these other dudes, we all took orders to Guantanamo Bay. I think this part of the story is just as important as anything, because now it's like, now I'm not at square one. I'm in the negatives, right? I'm out in the fleet. And they get everybody together from all over the Navy that's going to Guantanamo Bay for however long their orders are sending them there for, right? And everybody gets together and you get pulled up and you're staging in Gulfport, Mississippi. So I go from San Diego, California to Gulfport, Mississippi, bro. What a change, right? And I'm there with my buddies, you know, guys that I know are good dudes that, you know, didn't quit. And we're like, all right, this is it. We just got to do our time, take our medicine and get back out there, right? So it comes out pretty quick that we're all Buds duds. You know, whether you quit or got dropped, that's what they call you if you're washed out of the program and you're in the Navy. Now you're a Buds dud, which you can't get a more lame title. But, you know, we're all like, you know, hungry young dudes that want to get back into the pipeline. So we're pretty open about what we want to do with our careers. And they're like, whoa, whoa, slow down there, shipmate. Like, you got some time. Don't get in a rush here, right? You gotta pay your dues. Pay them we did, man. We for sure paid the man. We get down to Guantanamo Bay and you start talking to people, finding out like, okay, who do I have to talk to get orders back to Buds? Like, what do I gotta do? You know I gotta be here for a year, right? But I'm gonna train. And to be honest, man, like, as much as this place sucked, like, it was a great place to train because they had facilities where you could swim, which God knows I needed to do that. And then they had gyms where you could work out and really cool, like, trails to run and whatnot, right? So I had what I needed. I had the tools that I needed to succeed, right? It's just dealing with everything else, bro. So the job itself, I was a prison guard at the camps down at Guantanamo Bay. And when I say prison guard, it's not what you think. The job was to rove around in the bays, as they called them. So you got a camp, which is like a prison, and then a bay, which is like a pod with all these cells on. And in these cells are terrorists, like legit. You can look at their rap sheet. You can read what they did, terrorists, right? It's not like these guys were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like, these are the bad guys. These are the guys that I signed up to go capture, kill. It's like, I wanted to be the guy that put these guys in their cells or put them down. And here I am roving around, making sure that these dudes don't kill themselves. That was the job. It's like, you got to check the cells every 30 seconds. It's a constant rotation of, it's a 24/7 rotation of making sure that these guys are breathing. Like, what a slap in the face, take your medicine punishment this was, man. So it's like, I'm looking at these guys and they're looking right back at me. And it is just, it's hate on both sides of that door. These are the real deal bad guys. And here I am feeding them, giving them water and making sure they're breathing. I'm like, this is motivation. And I'll tell you, bro, I was fighting wars on every front. The job itself, right, was a war. Working with my peers, right? People that they don't care that you want to go to buds. They're happy you failed out, right? Them dealing with headshed and people trying to cut you orders. I'll never forget the chief down there. She's like, you guys are not, you're not going to buds. You're sailors. You know, you already had your chance. Your needs of the Navy now. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be harder than I thought. This is not a 1 year billet. This is like, this is a fight to get back. You start asking around and try to figure out who you got to talk to get your orders. And then we, all us buds duds that wanted to go back, you know, we kind of go do our little recons and, you know, asking questions and trying to figure things out. And then, you know, we'd huddle up and powwow at the end of the day and be like, all right, so who'd you talk to? Okay, this is the lead I got. Okay, cool, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you start to learn like who to talk to and who not to talk to, right? Meanwhile, it's like, I still got to train, right? I still got to, you know, do my runs, get in that pool, right? I'm still working out every day. And then, you know, back to work, roving the pods, checking in these cells, looking at these, my enemy, right? And dealing with that. It's like dealing with the enemy, dealing with my peers, dealing with, you know, big Navy, trying to get back to buds. And it's like, you learn pretty quick that this is a long road. Now, shout out to my Gitmo crew, because there was a lot of good dudes down there and gals who, you know, they hated these guys just as much as I did. And they were cool and they were supportive, right? I mean, I got people I still talk to, you know, share videos or memes with on Instagram that, you know, I was down in Gitmo with, that, you know, they're not SEALs or anything, but they were cool. They were just cool peeps that supported my friends and I about, you know, going back to buds, and, you know, good people. And yeah, they saw the struggle that we all went through. And it was just, like I said, man, it was fighting wars. It's like your peers, you know, working with people that they know you want to do something better than walk around the pod and look at terrorists, right? They know you want to get out there and fight these guys. And they're just haters, man. They're jealous. They're haters. And they try to beat you down every way they can. And it happened. It happened more often than I care to admit. And you can't do a damn thing about it. Like, you just got to shut your mouth and take your medicine and just like listen to these people disparage you and talk shit and hate. And it's like, and I never understood that, man, because it's like, who are you to like judge me? Who are you to like tell me I can't do this? Why wouldn't you support somebody for doing something or attempting to do something that's awesome? I never understood like the hater mentality. You know, it's just like, where's the love, man? You know, like, why aren't you supporting me? And it doesn't really matter, right? Because my mind, it's all white noise. It's all white noise to me anyway. Like, I'm like, I know what I got to do. I know what my goal is. I know what my focus is. And this is, that's it. Like, I mean, dude, I've lost friendships. I've lost relationships, you know, girlfriends, family members. Like, when you are laser focused on something, that's all it is. That's all that matters. Who cares? Who cares what somebody else says? Who cares what somebody else thinks? It becomes a problem when these people stand in your way, though. You know, you got people standing in your way of your goal. It's like, you don't want to cut me orders because you don't want me to go to Buds. You don't want me to take another crack at this. Oh, well, you had your shot. It's like, yeah, well, you know what? I'm going to get another one because I know who I am. And you don't take no for an answer. That's what it comes down to. You don't take no, you fight. And that's what it was, bro. It was a fight. You know, dealing with these terrorists, like looking at my enemy in the eye every day was just like all the motivation I needed, you know. But then I got more by the people I worked with that were, you know, hating on what I wanted to do, or the chiefs that didn't want to cut me orders, or the senior chiefs. I remember this senior chief chick, she was like hating so hard that she's like, you think you're something special, don't you? It's like, yeah, I do. And you know what? On the grinder, there's a sign that says, be someone special. So don't tell me, don't come at me like what I want to do is wrong, or I should be like shamed for it, or wanting to be special and do something special is something that should be frowned upon. That's what I'm saying. Like, I didn't understand the hate, but it was like, I used it, man. It was motivation. It was fuel. It was fire. And it kept me going, man. You know, as if I didn't have enough to do anyway, as if I didn't have enough motivation, like the hatred that I got from other people was just like, it was like fuel for me, right? 1 year billet ended up taking me 19 months because their whole thing, the Navy's whole thing was like, you are an undesignated sailor right now, which means I didn't have a rate. I didn't have a job. You know, I joined the Navy with a contract to go to Buds and become a SEAL. That didn't happen. Now needs of the Navy. Now we need you to get a job in the Navy. That's the only way back to Buds, or so they said. It's like, you want to go back to Buds? You got to get a job. It's like, all right, well, I don't know about this. And so now I'm like, you're treading lightly because you get a job, you get a rate. They may need you to go take that rate and work somewhere in the Navy, work somewhere else, go to another duty station in the job you're at. Like, I'm here in Gitmo as an undesignated shipmate. Gross. Now I got to get a job. And once I get a job, maybe they need me somewhere else with, you know, to fill a billet with this job. So, and I, you know, all the guys that I was down there with that were going back to Buds, we all had to do this. And the two jobs were AO, which is aviation ordnance, and then GM, which is gunner's mate. Those were like the two jobs that to choose from. And it was like, pick your poison, man, you know, good luck. And I went with the GM and they're like, oh, sweet. We've got a job for you over here. I'm like, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm fighting my way through this. Like, I'm going to figure out a way to, it's like, I got my job. I did what you wanted me to do. Give me my orders. Right. So it got to a point where it's like, I don't care who I piss off about this anymore. You're pissing me off by telling me that I got to go do this now. Right. You told me 1 year, pay my dues and I can go back to Buds. That's what I'm doing. Like, I'm not going to another duty station. I'm not going to take orders somewhere else. Like, I got my job. I'm doing my time. So I started backdooring people, you know. I'm like, all right, I'm not talking to you because you're not helping me. So I'm going to go talk to this person. And then next thing you know, you're getting called in. Who do you think you are going around me and blah, blah, blah. I was like, I think I'm the guy that is not going to take this shit anymore, right? I'm not taking no. And it worked. I burned a lot of bridges. I pissed a lot of people off and I did not care because I got what I wanted, which was orders back to Buds. It took me over a year to get those orders. I mean, ultimately, bro, as much as it sucked and as long as I was out of the pipeline, it was good because I got to train. Like, I was in that pool religiously. Like, I was up at 4 a.m. before work, swimming 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, just grinding, like figuring out my stroke, getting streamlined in the water. When you have a high aim, right, and you have a big goal, right, you don't let anything get in your way. You don't let anything deter you. You don't let anything slow you down. Right. Like I said, I had my moment to feel sorry for myself after I got dropped, but then it's like, okay, I know what I got to do and nothing's going to stop me. Right. I've already been there. I've seen it. I've gotten kicked in the nuts. Right. I'm willing to go back and do it again because this is what I want. And I'm training with guys, right? Like, again, I'm not the only one that this happened to. I mean, I think I might be the only one that went through four first phases, 2.5 hell weeks, but I'm not the only one that got dropped from buds and had to fight their way back. Some of these other guys that I was with, some of them picked the AO rating and they got shoved off to a ship and had to go fill a billet somewhere. And then everybody that picked GM for the most part got orders back to buds. And I'll say there was probably, I don't know, 8 to 10 of us down in Gitmo that were bud studs. And we had a pretty good success rate being retreads and going back through the training. I think only 3 or 4 of us quit. I got my orders back to buds. And as soon as I got those orders, dude, I'm like, that's my ticket. In my mind, I'm like, that's my trident. These orders, this is my trident right here.
It sounds to me like you getting back to buds might have been the hardest or one of the hardest things that you've ever done. And as a failure myself in many aspects of life, I've noticed that when we get in a position in between that failure and the next step to get back on track, that's where a lot of that learning and that growth can happen, because you no longer have control, or maybe just a little bit of control, right? Like you had enough control to where you could have a good attitude about your job while working as hard as you can physically, while also ultimately having to, you know, skip around the chain of command to accomplish the mission. And that right there could be one of the hardest things for guys like you and me to ever accomplish, is being humble and staying focused on the mission and just getting another chance. And growing up, my dad had this saying that has stuck with me so close to this day. And it's, cream always rises to the top. And when you guys,
amen,
metaphorically speaking, right, you put cream in a cup of coffee and it goes down to the bottom, but eventually that cream is going to rise to the top. And I would always just keep that close in my heart when I was going through those dark times after failure, trying to get back on the path to success. So please, man, continue. You get back to the grinder, you get back to Coronado. How did that feel to you?
Bro, it was different, man. You know, and to touch on some of the things you just were saying, dude, I played ball at first, you know, because I'm thinking like, hey, look, I'm going to do my time. I'm going to pay my dues, take my medicine, do the job, and then I'll get my shot. And then you realize, like, you know, you get around all these people that don't want to do anything more with their lives than just have a little bit of power over you. And then they start hating on you and what you want to do. And you're like, okay, well, I played ball and you're playing dirty. So now I'm going to play dirty, because I'm not going to let you, whoever you are, stand in my way of who I am and what I want to achieve, right? So I'm going to play dirty and I'm going to go around you and I'm going to backdoor you. And what are you going to do? You know, like, what are you going to do? You can't beat me down anymore. I don't have anything to lose, right? But as soon as I got those orders, bro, now I have something to lose, right? So now I'm like, okay, nothing else matters except for this. I got some other stories that, you know, I'll tell you offline, but like, I mean, as soon as I got those orders, man, I'm like now I have no friends, right? I mean, other than my buddies that got the orders with me, right? Who cares? Like, I'm just going to stay on track, you know, keep training, not get distracted, and just, you know, keep grinding, right? So by this point, SEALs have kind of become a little bit more popular. More people want to do it, right? This is 2009, and they've come up with the Buds Prep program, which for dudes that want to go to Buds after boot camp, they keep you in Great Lakes for a few months just to train. I mean, you're swimming every day, you're running, you're doing PT, you're getting ready for Buds. Like I said in the beginning, man, like when you asked me, how'd you train for Buds? Push-ups, run, sit-ups, pull-ups, and then, you know, doing the PT test, right? Because that's all you know. Now, people are getting smart to it. They're like, okay, we got to do this. We got to train this way. We got to get these guys ready for Buds, which I know a lot of people hated on it. A lot of team guys, you know, hated on the whole Buds prep thing. Honestly, I thought it was a good deal, man. I thought it was good for guys. Why wouldn't you want guys to be as prepared as they can be for training? You know, it's like, look, I saw some of the fittest, fastest, strongest, most in shape dudes quit, right? only you know if you're going to make it or not. No one else is in between your ears except for you. It doesn't matter how strong or how fast. Like, obviously, yes, you got to pass the evolutions. You got to crush that. You can't fail your way through it, right? But, you know, I've seen guys that are stronger than me, faster than me, you know, bigger than me, smaller than me, right? They come in all shapes and sizes, man. You don't know who's going to make it. Only the individual knows, right? One of the first things I heard was that, and Buds, and I used it at your SOCOM athlete event. We don't make SEALs, we find them. You know, that's what one of the instructors said. And I'm like, hell yeah, bro. It's like, you either got it or you don't. And only you know that, right? So that's what the training is designed to do. It's to find out who's a SEAL, right? And, you know, the Buds prep thing I thought was great because it's like, okay, we're getting ready. We're getting more prepared to pass our swims, pass our runs, you know, be more in shape for these evolutions and also be ready to take a beating again, man. And, you know, going to Great Lakes and seeing all these guys, I'm like, it was funny to me because I'm like, I'm looking at all these guys who have no clue what they're about to get into. And I'm like, you'll see, you know, I mean, there's the cockiest people in the world. Oh yeah, blah, 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 like this and that. And it's funny because, I mean, there's a few guys that, you know, were strutting around that made it through, but I would say the majority of those guys were the first ones to wash out. So yeah, I was at Great Lakes for a couple months. And here's the thing too, is like the guys that I was down at Gitmo with, we got orders at different times. Like, so there's guys that went before me back to Buds. There's guys that went after me back to Buds. So by the time I got to Great Lakes, like I was only with one other dude who was a retread. And I think he quit the first time. I know he quit the second time when we went back to Buds. But when I was down at Gitmo, you gravitate towards the guys that train a lot. And I always trained with dudes that were better than me. It kept me going harder, right? I never wanted to train with people that I could just, you know, outrun or outswim or out PT. You know, I always trained with guys that were stronger, faster, because it kept me sharp, you know? Iron sharpens iron, as you got on your description of your SOCOM podcast here. You know, iron sharpens iron, man. And when I got my orders back to Buds, hit up Great Lakes for a few months, got back out to San Diego, dude, it was the best feeling because I'm like, I'm here, I'm home, I'm back, I'm ready to get at it. Got back to San Diego in December of 2009, kind of classed up, but you know, it's the end of the year, holiday season, got a little bit of, you know, admin stuff knocked out, got cleared medically, and then, you know, break for the holidays and come back in January. Everybody that I was with, that I was going to class up with, everybody took leave, man. Everybody took leave and went home for the holidays or went on vacation, whatever. I stayed in Coronado. I'm like, I am here for one reason and one reason only. Like, I've been away from this place for too long. I don't need any vacations. I don't need to go home. I don't need to, you know, celebrate Christmas, right? I need to be here. I need to stay in the game. I need to stay sharp. I need to stay focused. January 1st rolls around and we're back in the grinder, man, and back in the saddle, and it's cold, dude. It was freaking cold. But, you know, I start looking around. I start asking around, finding out who the brown shirt rollbacks are, right? Who the white shirt rollbacks are, because these are the guys that I know have seen it, right? So I started gravitating towards these guys. I'm like, oh, yeah, so tell me, like, how was it? And we're comparing stories. I'm like, well, tell me about this evolution. Tell me about this day. He's like, yep, that still exists. That still sucks. So for people that say that Buds got easier, like it did not. If anything, there were things that were harder, right? And I was even more in shape. I was even faster, stronger, like more prepared. And I'm going back in square one. It's the same as it ever was. There was a little bit more structure. There was a, you know, Big Navy had gotten involved a little bit more, which kind of bummed me out, you know, because the whole thing about the SEAL teams, man, was like, it's a one-off from the Navy. You know, it's like, yeah, we're Navy SEALs, but dude, come on. Like, this is like a biker club, you know, this is a freaking gang and I want in, you know? And so getting back and kind of getting briefed by, you know, Navy people, you're like, ugh, like, all right, come on. you know who the real ones are, and it's the ones wearing the tridents, and you're waiting for them to come around and let you have it, right? I'm buddying up with guys that have been through first phase, got rolled in Hell Week or before Hell Week, right? Because I know that, hey, they made it that far. They didn't quit. Like, hey, let's get our boat crew stacked up. Like, let's, you know, let's stick together. So I classed up class 281, January, February timeframe, right? And it is freezing, dude. It was, I'll never forget, like, going into first phase, man, same number of people, you know, about 200 to 300 guys going in dock, right? In dock was a little bit tougher, I'll say. Like, they didn't let you, you know, slide by that, you know, classing back up 281 first phase, bro. It came with all the bells and whistles, man. Like, nothing changed as far as the energy, the pain, the torture, and it was grueling, dude. And again, I mean, it was the same as it always was, like evolutions. Here's your swims. Here's your runs. Here's your O courses, right? Here's your log PT, your boats on heads, right? Your grinder PT, your inspections. You're getting run into the dirt, right? I want to back up a minute here because I've always been a fan of SEALs, right? I mean, I am a SEAL, or I was a SEAL, and I'm still a fan of. You know, it's like they're heroes in my eyes, right? And when I first went through BUDS, bro, it was 2006, 2007. So it's coming right off of, like, you know, it's the war in Iraq is hot. Things like, you know, Operation Red Wing, Mikey Mansoor, all these, you know, things that haven't been publicized. Like, there's team guys were doing some wild shit, right? Some crazy, badass, awesome, heroic stuff, right? And some of these dudes are your instructors, bro. And especially in first phase, like, I mean, and knowing what a shore duty, a shore command is all about, and being an instructor, it's like when you get pulled out of the fight like that, like, your instructor cadre, man, like, these are like legit war heroes, dude. Like, guys that have been out there fighting, you know, and killing the bad guys. And I'm down there babysitting them and feeding them baklava, whatever that crap is that they eat. They still can't even look at it to this day, you know, hummus and whatever other junk, right? I mean, these guys are like, they're schwacking these dudes, and now they're your instructors, and they're bringing the hammer down on you. They're actually like, they probably hate you more because they don't want to be there, you know? They want to be out there in the fight, right? So having these guys as your instructors, it's cool because you know that they're bringing the heat, you know? They don't care. They want you to quit. So that was like 2006, 2007, right? And then I get back there in, you know, 2010, and, you know, the war's still been going on. You get these guys that are cut from the same cloth, man, same era of frogmen that have just been fighting. You know, I recognized a couple of them, and they recognized me, which was kind of cool because it's like there was a respect there, you know, like they didn't give me anything. I got zero handouts or hooked up with anything, and I didn't want that anyway, but there was the respect. It's like, hell yeah, dude, you made it back. Like, now here, suck on this. Right? Take that. So yeah, man, I'm back in 281, same numbers, 200 to 300 guys classing up, get to Hell Week. At this point, man, my swims are locked in, my runs, all my evolutions, I'm not worried about at all. Like, I'm crushing everything performance wise, right? But I'm getting wrecked, dude. And this time of year, guys are getting sick, and, you know, it's winter time, right? I mean, wintertime in San Diego is what it is, but it's still January, February. And this bug starts going around where it's called VGE. And I'm sure you're familiar with it. And basically, I'm just like, I'm shitting my brains out. I'm sick as a dog. I lost like probably like 12 pounds. I remember my buddy like looking at me. He like looked me up and down, and then he looked at me, and the look that he had on his face was like concern. And I mean, I knew in my head, like, yeah, this sucks, but like, whatever, you know, but he was like, he looked like worried about me. I mean, I was just like, I was just sick as a dog, but I mean, whatever, you know, like, it's not going to stop me. it adds to the grind, right? I mean, you still got to perform, but I mean, dude, I had it locked in my mind, right? I mean, nothing was going to stop me here. And I remember my old man came out, him, my brother, and then one of his buddies who was a team guy, who when I was in Gitmo, was kind of, he helped me navigate getting back to Buds. But they all came out to support me as I was about to go to hell through Hell Week again, shot number two through Hell Week. And, you know, they came out the weekend before, and I couldn't stop coughing. That's one thing I remember, is like, I just kept coughing and I couldn't stop. But, you know, again, whatever, like, this isn't, it is what it is. Like, it's not going to quit because I'm coughing. You know, I mean, I'm sick, I'm shitting, I'm coughing, whatever, it's is what it is, right? So Hell Week kicks off, and I'm just like, I'm going through it. I'm taking my beating, and you know, I'm fighting my way through it. And then I start, like, my vision starts getting blurry, and I'm like slowing, like everything's like kind of like slow motion. Like I'm like, I can't move as fast as like I know I'm capable of. I'm pushing it, but I'm like, this is, my legs aren't working. Like my vision's not working. And now I feel like I'm like slowing down my boat crew, and now I'm getting dogged, and I'm like, what is going on here? Like, I can't move my feet faster. And now the instructors, I've got their attention, and they're trying to hammer me. I'm like, God damn it. Like, come on. And Tuesday morning comes around, and we have medical checks, and I'm coughing, and I'm like, something's wrong here. Like, this isn't just like, I'm weak. Like, this is like, something's up. You know, I went up to the medical ambu, and I was talking to the corpsman there, team guy. And he's like, I was just like, you know, something's up. Like, I'm just, something's up. He's like, cough and spit in your hand. So I started coughing, hawked up a loogie, spit it in my hand. And it was like a blood clot. Like, I mean, it was just like dark red blood. And he's like, all right, you're going to medical. So I go to medical again. This is Tuesday morning. So I'm, you know, 2 days into Hell Week. I'm in medical. By the way, dude, like, for those of you out there that don't know, like, Buds is cold and it's wet and you are soaked to the bone 24/7, right? Especially in Hell Week. So you're jackhammering. That's how you lose a lot of weight too, right? You're just like shivering it out of you. I get into medical, and they lay me down on the bed. They take this blanket. It felt like they took it like right out of a hot oven. They threw this blanket on me and gave me a watch cap. I was so cozy, man. And I'm laying there and I'm just like, oh man, I don't want to move. I don't want to get up. I just want to lay here and just like snuggle and just go to sleep. And I remember thinking, like, you know, because they did these tests on me or whatever, and I'm waiting on the results, and I'm sitting there and I'm warm and cozy. And I'm thinking in my head, like, all right, don't get too comfortable, because if they come back and they tell you you're going back out there, then you get your ass up and get back out there. But if they tell you you're getting rolled, by God, I will take that roll. And then they come back, you know, however many minutes later, and they're like, yeah, we're rolling you. And I'll tell you, there was a little bit of relief there, man. Like, I was like, thank God. Cause I mean, I'm warm, I'm toasty, and I am banged up. Like, something's up. Right. So then they ship me off to Balboa Medical Hospital, and turns out I had SIPE and pneumonia, which SIPE is swimmer induced pulmonary edema. Basically, that's why I was coughing up all the blood. And then I had pneumonia. I mean, we were doing our ocean swims in red tide, which, for those of you that don't know, like, when it rains out here in San Diego, that runoff from Mexico washes into the ocean, and you're swimming in sludge and, you know, waste. And that's what got me sick. Yeah, man. So I got that role. At the time, I was like relieved, because I was down hard, you know, coughing up blood, and then found out having pneumonia and SIPE. Like, I probably had the pneumonia going into Hell Week and then got the SIPE while I was in the water at some point, or vice versa. Who knows? I was sick going into it, but it was never anything that, you know, I really, it wasn't like a factor in me making it through or not, you know. It was just physically, I just put me down, you know. It was never like, oh, I'm sick, I can't do this. It was just like, are my legs not working? Why can't I see straight? Why am I coughing up blood? So yeah, man, I took that that first role, and that bummed me out, man, because that class 2 weeks, I was a bunch of hard dudes, and that was that was the coldest I'd ever been in training. You know, there's a portion of Hell Week, it's called Steel Pier, and you're on a steel pier and you jump into the water at like 2 a.m, like first night, and you're just treading water. And then you get out and you start stripping off clothing, like just piece by piece. And dude, it was crazy, man. I remember thinking, like, you know, when they say enter the water, you had to jump right in. Like, you can't stand there, you can't think about it, or else, you know, bad thoughts are going to enter your head. And I just get in the water. And at one point it was so cold, like I was just treading water with my arms, because my calves, my shins, my hamstrings, and my thighs were all cramped. Like, I couldn't use my legs at all. We're in the water, you can see your breath, you know. It was freezing. And I remember seeing the guys who came out of that Hell Week, and they were just hard bodies, like just hardcore. And I was like, I was bummed that I didn't get to go through with them, but I just physically was down. Yeah, bro. I got rolled for Siphon Pneumonia 281, second Hell Week. That was my third first phase. So now I'm waiting to class back up and I'm recovering. You know, they say that everybody thinks about quitting. I don't know whether or not that's true, but I will say the only time that I ever thought about quitting, which I can't even say I really thought about quitting, but I just remember thinking that I didn't want to do this anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was, you know, three first phases, two Hell Weeks. It's like, I was in my car. I was in between classes, right? I had just gotten rolled out of 281. I was driving down the Strand to a coffee shop. I'm in my car. I got sweatshirt on, my flip flops. I'm warm. I'm cozy. I'm driving. And I'm just thinking about doing this again, right? I'm thinking about having this class back up for a fourth time. It's like indoc, first phase, another Hell Week. And I just remember thinking, like, dude, I do not want to do this. You know, I'm sitting in my car. I got the heat on. Like, you know, I'm like, I'm warm. I'm cozy. I do not want to do this again, man. I'm like, all right, well, my time's coming up. So then I start exploring options. I'm like, all right, well, my time's kind of coming up in the Navy. Like, what could I do? I could get out. I could use my GI Bill. I could go back to school. You know, my dad was a cop. He's probably got some connections in law enforcement. I could go do that. I'm like, I do not want to do this again. And I got to thinking, like, well, I don't really like school. I got a problem with authority, so I wouldn't be a good cop. What do I want? Well, I want to be a SEAL. I want to be a frogman. Well, what do I got to do? I got to get back up. I got to get on that horse. I got to saddle up and I got to go at it again. So, I mean, that was the only, I would say, like, it was the only time I ever considered something else, because I had gone into this third BUDS class, or at this point, it's my fourth BUDS class. I had gone into this fourth BUDS class, like, stronger than I'd been before, right? More mentally determined. And then I get rolled and I'm like, oh my God, like, how much more of this I got to go through? You know, BUDS and SQT, it's a 1-year pipeline. It took me 6 years to get through a 1-year pipeline. I'm like, you know, it is what it is. I got to do what I got to do, right? So heal up, class up with 283, right back in the mix, day 1-1 on the grinder, getting hammered. By this point, you know, I know the drill. It's not any easier, but I mean, I know what's up. Get to Hell Week, get through Hell Week. Probably have like 40 to 50 guys on the back end of Hell Week, down from, you know, 200 to 300 in the beginning of training. Feeling good. I remember looking around at the guys after that Hell Week. Like, this is my my second full complete Hell Week. And these other guys are, you know, they're hugging each other and crying and happy. And that's how I was the first time I got through. I was super stoked. But here I am, like, I'm like, this isn't over, you know, like I'm glad this part of it's over, but you know, we still got a long way to go. And, you know, as soon as we secured from Hell Week, I'm already thinking about pool comp, right? So get to second phase. I can't walk. So at the end of the first phase, you have like a close out, hoo-yah run, like, hey, we're done with first phase, moving into second phase. We're going to go on like a nice, long, easy run. Well, that it was a long run for sure, but it wasn't easy. And we were probably pushing like a 6:45 minute pace. And I was like determined to stay at the front. And I did. And it cost me, because that was Thursday or Friday, the last week of first phase. And we classed up with second phase on Monday. Come Saturday, I couldn't walk. I was like limping around, and I'm like, oh no. I'm like, all right, well, maybe it's just, you know, I just need to recover a little bit more. Sunday comes around. I'm like, I can't even put weight on my feet. I mean, I get out of bed and I can't stand up. And so we pull up Monday to second phase, and I went to medical, and I'm like, hey, like, I cannot walk. Like, I'm, you know, every step is just like shooting pain up the sides of my legs. I don't even know how I got to medical. I remember limping and just being like in excruciating pain. And they did the x-rays, or they looked at me and they're basically like, well, your legs are broke. They call it shin splints, but I mean, I still have pain in my legs from to this day. You know, it's as soon as I wake up in the morning, and part of it's getting older too, but I mean, you know, these injuries, they are still with me. You know, I wake up in the morning, as soon as I put my feet on the ground, I feel it's like lightning or electricity, like shooting up from my heels up to my back. You know, I do acupuncture and I go to a chiropractor just to kind of help mitigate it. But I mean, those are injuries for life. So they diagnosed me and said that, you know, you're banged up. And at that point, you know, I had said before, it's like you get one performance role, one medical role. At least that's how it was back 2006, 2007, right? You know, now it's 2010. And I mean, they could have dropped me, you know, they could have been like, you're gone. But the thing is like, once you make it past Hell Week, like you're not really going to get dropped from medical, unless you're like a medical commando and you're always in there and you're, you know, just trying to avoid training. They want to keep you. They want SEALs, you know, they want guys to become SEALs, you know, like guys are always, you know, retiring or getting out or whatever. It's like, they need SEALs to keep the community going, right? So they're not super anxious about dropping you medically after Hell Week. I had the opportunity to get rolled and heal up. So this was my longest roll. So I went from class 283 to 287, right? And if you're looking at it on paper, like everything's kind of looks the same, right? So 264, I get to Hell Week, and then I get rolled for performance, right? 281, I get into Hell Week and I get rolled for medical. 265, I make it through Hell Week to second phase, I get rolled for medical, right? 283, I make it through Hell Week to second phase, get rolled for medical. 266, class back up, get dropped for pool comp. 287, here we go again, all right? Class up, second phase, 287, all healed up. Ready to, you know, get back into it. I know what it is up until this point. I go through the first few weeks. Now we're into pool week again. Okay. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, breeze right through all those evolutions, all those dive evolutions, you know, buddy breathing, ditch and don, everything they got. No problem. I know what to expect here. And in my mind, I'm like, I passed it before, I can pass it again. And I did. Friday rolls around. Here we are. We're right back where we started, or we ended, I should say, right? We're back at pool comp. And, you know, in my mind, I'm like, I got this. I'm not going to give this any more attention than it deserves, right? Well, the problem with that was I didn't give it enough attention. I failed my first two tests on Friday and I'm like, oh shit. And here we are, another long weekend. And I remember what my old man told me when I got dropped. He's like, remember that feeling that you've got right now? You don't ever want to feel that again. And I'm like, hell no, I don't ever want to feel that again. And I'm here. I by the grace of God and some luck and some hard-headedness, I am back and I am not going to fail again. So I did what I didn't do the first time and I trained. I spent that whole weekend on the grinder with wooden tanks training. I did 6 hours on Saturday, 6 hours on Sunday, filling my mask up with water, throwing the tanks on, throwing the belt on, and just drilling my procedures, right? Even though, you know, the first time I kind of was like, oh, well, I don't see what kind of good this can do. I'm like, I'm leaving nothing to chance. I'm not going to make the same mistake again. And I'm going to drill this until I am confident that I've got it. And I went psycho, man. Like I really was like, in my mind, I'm like, I am absolutely crushing this, right? And I would say out loud, I must have said it 100,000 times throughout the entire weekend and up until I got back in that pool on Monday, I was saying out loud, I will beat pool comp. I will beat pool comp. I will beat pool comp. I convinced myself into believing that I would crush this test. And I mean, I had, you know, guys in my class, they're looking at me like, who, like, what is your deal, dude? And I didn't care, bro. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like, I was brainwashing myself into beating this test. And, you know, I ended up breaking up with my girlfriend at the time. It was Easter weekend. And she wanted me to come over to her house for dinner on Easter Sunday. And I'm like, nope, I'm training. And we ended up breaking up over it, whatever. Probably shouldn't have had a girlfriend going through training anyway, but I just went psycho on it, man. And I'm just like, yeah, you had that long weekend. All you're doing is thinking about Monday morning, getting back in the water for your third attempt. Now, granted, I hadn't been rolled for performance yet, but I'd already been rolled twice for medical. And I'm like, I'm just not going to fail this. I am going to beat it. I'm going to crush it. Hammering away in my mind that I'm going to crush this test. And I hop in the pool and my instructor, right? This whole thing came full circle, bro. The guy that I got, he was on his last class. 287 was his last class as an instructor. When I got dropped in 266, that was his first class as an instructor. So here we are, a few years later, right? I get the same instructor that I had when I got dropped. And this is his last class. And he is putting me through the test, man. And I'm like, bro, if this is not like some serendipitous like signs here, it's like, here we go. So enter the water. 20 minutes later, I come up. He looks at me and he's like, well, how do you think you did? And dude, I absolutely crushed that test. But I wanted to stay humble, wanted to stay cool. And I was like, yeah, no, I think I did all right. He's like, dude, you just blew it out of the water. Like, you nailed it. And
you did it. It was my man.
It was almost better than getting my Trident, bro, because this was like years of torture. It was like demons like haunting me, nightmare fuel. And I finally got back to where I wanted to be, where I failed that fail point. And I, not only did I like pass, dude, but I crushed it. You know, I didn't give it the respect it deserved on those first two attempts because I was like, I didn't want to psych myself out a little bit. You know, like, I think that was kind of my mindset is like, I don't want to trip out on this. Like, yeah, this is what dropped me, but I don't want to give it more fuel than it needs. But that was the wrong attitude. It's like, I need to focus on this and this needs to be get all my attention and all my fuel. And I need to go psycho. And it was the only way, bro. Dude, it was, I remember telling my instructor after he told me I crushed it, I was like, look, I just got to tell you, man, like I was here years ago. You were my first instructor or you were my instructor in 266, which was your first class. And it's just crazy to me that you know, I passed with you and this is your last class. It's like this whole thing came full circle. And dude, it was just, it was amazing, man. Like I was so stoked and I felt so accomplished and proud. And I was just like, I was on a high for a long time, man, until the end of, well, probably until the end of the day. Then it was like, you know, we're still training, right? But I made it through the rest of the pipeline with that class 287, the rest of second phase, third phase, and all of SQT. And then I went on to graduate at SQT March 2nd, which is in about a week, is going to be, you know, however many years, March 2nd, 2012. So there's only two dates I remember. It's August 31st was the day I got dropped, 2007. March 2nd, 2012 is the day I got pinned. And yeah, man, I mean, it wasn't easy after that, you know, but I was so driven and I was so determined and I was just like, you know, getting dropped for something, right? I mean, again, I wasn't the only guy to do more than one hell week or more than one first phase. There was actually a buddy of mine when I first went to Buds in 264, he met up with him, you know, met him in Buds, found out he was from Maryland, not far from where I grew up. He had gone to Buds before and he had gotten dropped in second phase post hell week. I don't think it was for pool comp. It might've been some evolution, but either way he got dropped. He got kicked out to the fleet. He made it back. He went through hell week again. He made it through. He got to the teams and we used to joke with each other. Like, you know, it's, I'm all about the small percentages, right? The small percentage of guys that make it through hell week, the small percentage that gets dropped after hell week, and then the small percentage that comes back and makes it through again. Right. We used to clown around and be like, you know, anybody can make it through one hell week. Let me see you make it through two. Yeah, bro. It took 6 years to get through a 1 year pipeline, man. You know, Buds is 6 months, SQT is 6 months. Bro, it took forever. And I told myself, hey, you know, it took me 6 years to get here. I'm giving 6 years back to the teams at least. I'll make my decision then whether or not I'm going to stick around and, you know, keep serving or if I'm going to get out and do something else, which is ultimately what I did. I served 11 years, 11 months and 29 days active duty. Dude, it was great, man. I mean, even with all the failures and, you know, getting rolled and just everything I had to go through, bro, it was, I'm glad it happened. You know, at the time it sucked. It was the worst thing ever, you know, but, and even though it felt like the end of the world, it wasn't, you know, it made me stronger. And it was one of those things. It's like, it's either, I'm either going to let this failure define me by accepting it, or I'm going to let this failure define me by getting stronger and coming back and crushing it. And I'll tell you, bro, it was worth it, you know, getting through and graduating. I mean, had I given up, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. I wouldn't have the beautiful family that I have, the blessed life that I have, right? I would not have had all the opportunities that I had if I would have quit. And again, like the only time I ever really thought about it was when I was comfortable and letting my mind kind of wander. I mean, at no point during the training was I like, this is too hard. I want to ring out, just because I'm like, you know what? This is just the price you pay. It is what it is, right? Making it through, crushing my demons, you know, using those failures to get stronger. Like it was worth it, brother. And I'm glad it happened because it made me who I am. And I'm proud of that. And getting to the teams, checking into team seven, being a new guy, dude, I loved it. I loved it because it's like, you know, this, you're in the tribe now, you know, and now you earn it again, you know, you earn it as a new guy, earn your stripes, take your lumps, you know, go through the gauntlet, go through the initiation. You know, that's why like the Trident is so sacred to me because of not just what I had to do to get it, but the guys that have given their life wearing that thing. You know, I had buddies I went through, you know, my first few classes that went on to become team guys and ended up getting killed downrange, you know? And I mean, that sucks when you're in Guantanamo Bay and you're hearing about your buddies that you knew that are out there doing the job getting killed. And here I am serving these terrorist clamshells of hummus and whatever, they're keeping them alive. You're like, man, this is like, it's sickening.
But you did it, man. And, you know, I know that this episode, we're focusing mostly on, you know, just your incredible story of completing Buds and ultimately that, that big demon, which was, pool comp. But, you know, before we close here, John, you got your opportunity to deploy. And I went to Afghanistan in 2012. You went in 2013. So the getting was still good. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience in Afghanistan, if you wouldn't mind?
Yeah, man, dude, it was just about everything I hoped it would be. We didn't get bin Laden, but you know, we were looking for him. it was cool, brother. It was like, what I signed up to do, man. It's like, I want to suit up and I want to go look for a fight with a bunch of my boys who are like-minded. And I mean, there's no better feeling, bro. Like when you're throwing your kit on, throwing your gear on, loading your ammo, making sure your guns are clean, your nods are working, right? Like packing out, right? And then it's like, I'm climbing on this chopper at night and we're going to go insert into Indian country somewhere and hope that somebody wants to get some. Unfortunately, I never got to stack up my body count. You know, I was looking, we were out there. I mean, some of my buddies and guys that I was deployed with, they got after it. I never really had the opportunity to open up on anybody. But dude, we were looking for it, man. And it was great, dude. It was everything that I hoped it would be. Like I said, man, as far back as I can remember, I just wanted to hunt down bad guys and kill them.
What part of Afghanistan were you in?
We were in Terran Kaut in the Uruzgan province. So we were just cruising around there looking for fights. We actually, at one point, went and staged with some Green Berets, and those guys were getting some action. We were hoping that we were going to meet up with them and get a little piece of the pie there. But look, we were out there. We were doing ground mobility ops. You know, we were inserting, you know, 24, 48, 72-hour infills, and you know, we were looking for it. But the ones that I went on, there wasn't anything. I didn't have anybody in my sights, you know, in my field of fire. Other dudes did, and they got after it. But you know what, man, the way I look at it is, I got to do my job. It's like being special teams on the Patriots, right, when they're winning the Super Bowl, right? I'm not making the big plays, but I'm out there doing my job. You know, I'm still hunting. And it was great, bro. I loved it. And, you know, being a new guy, just soaking in every bit of it and being the A-dub gunner, you know, rolling out the door with 700, 800, 900 rounds of ammo, hoping to just dump it on somebody or a bunch of somebody's. It was great, bro. I loved every minute of it. I loved the initiation. I loved the beatdowns. I loved what it took for me to, I mean, at the time, again, I mean, it sucked, especially when I got, you know, kicked out to the fleet, right? I mean, there was no, when you're out in the fleet, man, like nobody cares. Nobody cares that you went to Buds. They just look at you as another failure, right? Whatever, man. You know, I did what I had to do. And I had other buddies with me that did the same thing. We had a pretty good turnover rate with our Gitmo crew going down there, training and getting back to Buds and making it through and going on to the teams and doing good things. And yeah, man, at the end of the day, I did what I wanted to do and I did it by any means necessary. I didn't take no for an answer. I felt God there with me, you know, and it was because of my why. It was because why I was doing this whole thing. You know, it's like, yeah, I wanted to be a team guy so that I could, you know, fight with the best and, you know, take out the enemy. But I also, like, why am I doing that? It's because I love my country. I love my family. I love my friends. I want to protect our land, our people. I want to do that with who I think are the best war fighters of the modern age. And it was great, dude. I mean, I really, everything that I did, I had a lot of support from family. I had love and friends. I felt this strength of God, and I am thankful for every up, every down, and every high and every low, because it made me who I am, bro. And I'm just very grateful and thankful that I got to experience that and be a part of that and just be a part of something bigger than myself. That's why I agreed to come on here and talk to you, man, because I think what you're doing with your program, if I had something like this available to me when I was going through or when I was coming up, I would have been all over this. I think what you do for these guys, what you help these guys to realize about themselves is huge. I think you've had guys come through your pipeline that have gone on to become special operators. You know, we need this next generation to step up and to just be there to defend this country, you know, and look, we're not in the game anymore. You know, guys that were fighting these wars, you know, they're few and far between now. You know, that Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, those guys, if they're still in, they're in their last few years, right? We got to hold the line, you know, and I think what you're doing is a really important piece. And I hope that, you know, your listeners, your followers, guys that are going through this program, hopefully there's something here that I've said today and told you that they can use to move forward, to hold on to when they're feeling low, to inspire them, to help them break through. Honestly, bro, I love what you do. I respect the hell out of it, and I'm honored to be on here today. Thank you for letting me tell my story. I know I got a little long-winded. I honestly could just write a book just on, or do a podcast just on Guantanamo Bay. There's a million stories that I could sidebar off of this main story. You know, I mean, it's just, there's a lot to this. You know, it was 12 years of my life, you know, 6 years of it was trying to get through the training, not to mention everything leading up to joining the military. Didn't even really touch on that because, I mean, we'd be here for a week. Yeah, man. I just thank you for the opportunity to come on here and talk to you. And hopefully your listeners find something that I've said is inspiring to help push them through and get them to achieve their dreams.
Well, brother, I wouldn't be here without men like you coming into this program and volunteering their time and giving back to the up and coming warfighters. So I'm just humbled to have you on here today, John. I mean, listening to your story was super motivating and interesting and inspiring. And I know we joked about it, but man, you should write a book about your journey to get the Trident. There are a lot of people that are hungry for stories like that of never quitting. You mentioned a lot of our studs getting through the pipeline that have come through our program. I am flying out to Coronado on March 7th to watch one of my closest students earn his Trident and become a SEAL. And I don't want to invite myself over to your place, man, but I'd love to see you out there and give you a big hug, dude. I'm only in town for a couple days, but I'd love to stop by and see you, brother.
For sure, dude. Yeah. We'll definitely keep in touch on that. And dude, that's in a few weeks, man. That's, yeah. We'll definitely have to link up. I never miss an opportunity to go over to the kingdom and see a Trident pinning, you know?
Yeah, brother, you've actually met this guy before, so I'm not going to name drop him on the podcast, but you've met him before. So I'm super pumped to get out there, man. But John, thank you so much for coming on the Send Me podcast, brother, and just being transparent and open and sharing your story with us, man. What an inspiration.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me. It's been an honor, and I hope somebody out there gets something out of this and uses it to push through. And look, if there's one thing I can leave you guys with, is never quit. No matter how hard, no matter how low you sink or how much it sucks, you'll regret it for the rest of your life.
Thanks, John. I'll see you soon, brother. Have a great rest of your day, man.
You too, brother. God bless.
Hey, for those of you listeners out there that want to keep in touch with John or shoot him a message and tell him how you feel, how you were inspired about his episode, hit him up on Instagram. He is Shoot, Eat, and Lift. Again, that Instagram handle is Shoot, Eat, and Lift. Hit our man up on Instagram. let them know how you feel. And you guys have heard me say this before. If you're listening to this episode on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, it goes a huge way for us to just give us a 5-star review or a written review and tell our listeners about how you feel about the podcast. These reviews just take a couple seconds out of your day, and they significantly help with spreading awareness of the show to reach a larger audience. And as we close today, I leave you with the verse that this podcast is named after. It comes from the book of Isaiah, chapter 6, verse 8. And then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am, send me."